Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 4. And this morning we're going to do texts 41 through 44. So if you like, you could just put 44 up there, and I'll just chant and read the chant the Sanskrit and read the translations for 41, 2, and 3, and then we'll chant 44 together. Okay? Ityapa prasya rajarshish chintayan mana manasachchutam pratya chasta kurushesta dvija gamanam evasa. O best of the Kuru dynasty, after he drank some water, King Ambarish, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, waited for the return of the great mystic Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Yamuna Kulat Kritavasyaka Agata Ragya Binanditastasya Bubude Chestitam Dia. After executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of the Yamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects. But Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Ambarish had drunk water without his permission. Manyuna prachalad gatro brukuti kutalanana bubukshitascha sutaram krit. Tanjalim Abhasata. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. And now this is 44, we can chant this together. Aho Asya Nir Samshaya. Aho Asya Nir Samshaya. Shriyon Matasya Pasyata. Shriyon Matasya Pasyata. Dharma Vyatikramam Vishnur. Dharma Vyatikramam Vishnur. Abhaktasyesha Manina. Abhaktasyesha Manina. Aho asya nirsamshaya. Shriyon matasya pasyata. Dharma vyati kramam vishnur. Abhakta sheshamanina. Keep training. It's okay. Vaishnavis. Asya, of this man, Nirsamsasya, who is so cruel, Shriya Unmatasya, puffed up because of great opulence, Pasyata, everyone just see, Dharma Vyatikramam, the transgression of the regulative principles of religion. Vishnu Abhaktasya, who is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Ishamanina, considering himself the Supreme Lord, independent of everything. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. Purport. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by Devasamuni. Devasamuni used the word nirsamsasya to indicate that the king was cruel. But Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur interprets it to mean that the king's character was glorified by all the local people. He says that the word nir means by all the local people, and that samsasya means of Ambarish, whose character was glorified. Similarly, one who is very rich becomes mad because of his wealth and is therefore called Shriya Unmatasya. But Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur interprets these words to mean that although Maharaj Ambarish was such an opulent king, he was not mad after money, for he had already surpassed the madness of material opulence. Similarly, the word Ishamanina is interpreted to mean that he was so respectful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he did not transgress the laws for observing Ekadasi Purana, despite the thinking of Durvasamuni, for he only took water. In this way, Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur has supported Ambarish Maharaj and all his austerities. Om Aginati Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshurana Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantipam. So, we're about to hear about exactly what you don't want to do in life. If you had to make a list of the 10, things, 10 most important things not to do in life, this would probably be at the top of the list. You couldn't make a bigger mistake than what Mr. Vasamuni is about to make now. What is he doing? He's going out of his way, just out of sheer envy. I can't remember if it was described earlier in this chapter, if I heard it, Prabhupada describe it elsewhere. But it was just out of sheer envy. He was a brahmana, and he was thinking, here's this Kshatriya king, and he's becoming so famous and so glorious, and everybody's making such a big deal out of him. And I'm a Brahmin. I'm a mystic yogi. I mean, how is my position? It's like my prestige is being usurped, is being eclipsed. is a better word. My prestige is being eclipsed by this king who, what is he anyway? He's just a king, a Kshatriya. And I'm going to do something about this. Out of sheer envy, what does he do? He's going and he's trying to find a fault with Maharaj Ambarish, who's faultless. You know, he's a pure devotee of Krishna. And so just so he could, you know, find some fault and try to punish him. Exactly. I mean, this is exactly the wrong thing. As I said, the number one stupid thing that a person could do in their life would be this. This happy right at the top of the list. And he's still bewildered. Listen, as he says here, just see the behavior of this cruel man. What was cruel? What was cruel about what he was doing? You know, he's just trying to observe the Ekadasi and break the fast at the right time. If anything, he was very gentle. You know, he just drank some water, which, as we heard previously, you know, is breaking a fast and not breaking a fast. He's saying he's not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. What's it to him anyway? Where does he come? Where does Lord Vishnu come into the picture in his life anyway? We just heard a few verses back that he went and he was meditating on the impersonal Brahman. You see? So in other words, just like now, for his own purposes, all of a sudden he's throwing Vishnu into the picture. What does he have to do with Vishnu? Right? He's not even a devotee himself. But he's saying he's not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence, his position, he considers himself God. Now, I mean, if this isn't an example of Atmavan Manyate Jagat, I don't know what is, right? He's the one who's thinking himself God. He's, you know, disregarding all the Vedic etiquette and the Vedic principles in doing like this. But he's already, by this point, so covered over. His intelligence is totally so covered by envy that he's not thinking straight. And the example that he's not talking straight. He's just saying total nonsense here. Just see how he has transgressed the law of God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. What did he do? He's just going to break the fast. He observed an Ekadasi fast for a year, and he's going to take a little water to break the fast. And he's being accused. Rasa Muni is accusing him of breaking the laws of religion, which is, I mean, really, it's totally debatable whether that was even at all a transgression. And here he's about to perform the greatest transgression of the law of religion, and he doesn't see that at all. So this is an amazing, pastime. And one lesson we can immediately learn from this, and it's another good example of a lesson that's already been taught earlier in the Bhagavatam, is you can't equate power with advancement. I mean, here's a person who's pretty powerful, right? He was pretty powerful. Without a lot of background information, just from what we've just heard in these few verses preceding this, he went to take his bath, and when he came back, he could understand by his mystic power that Ambarish Maharaj had broken the fast. So he's a powerful man. He's a Brahmin and he's a powerful mystic yogi. He could understand by mystic power that had happened, and he was right. Okay. Also, when he got angry, he just pulled out some hair and threw it down, and he created this big fire demon, that was supposed to either at least scare Maharaj Ambarish, because he says, if you look at his words, he says, now I'm going to create something to show you something, to punish you, or something like that. He didn't actually say, now this demon's going to kill you, but anyway, whether that was his intention or whether it was just his intention to scare Maharaj Ambarish, either one, it's totally off. But he was powerful. So anyway, to get to the point, you could be powerful and you could be stupid. Here's an example of somebody who was very powerful, and later we'll hear about how when the Sudarsan Chakra is coming to punish him, he flees and he goes all over the universe. He went all over the universe. He went to where Lord Brahma was. He went to where Lord Shiva was. He was able even to go to where Lord Vishnu was, which means he had to enter into the Vaikuntha planets. So he was powerful, but he was not intelligent. And Prabhupada says so. And subsequent purports of Prabhupada says his intelligence was covered. So that's a lesson we learned from this. And of course, and you know, as I said, there's so many other lessons like that. We just got finished with the seventh canto a few months back, and we saw the same thing, Hiranyakasipu. I mean, if talk about powerful, Hiranyakasipu was so powerful, he was controlling the universe. I mean, even all the demigods were kowtowing to him. I mean, he was powerful. But, you know, what was his activity? Trying to kill a Mahabhagavat, who's his own son. Not only was he a pure devotee, but he was trying to kill his own son, who happened to be a pure devotee. I mean, from these examples, we should be able to clearly understand that, you know, power does not equate with advancement in life. You could be very powerful, and you could still be a total idiot, which is what we learn from these examples here. So, just to, give us a little overall perspective on the importance of devotees, the association of devotees, the importance of not offending, associating with devotees in a favorable way and not offending them. I wanted to just do a quick review of some statements from Prabhupada's books, mostly the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, that I'm aware of, where Prabhupada, and the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya clearly emphasize the importance of taking the association of the devotees in a favorable way and not in an unfavorable way. So I'll just go through these very quickly and then say a few more things about this particular pastime. So just, starting with the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, we have the statement by, I believe it's Suta Goswami, to the sages of Namasharanya. He says, Shru Shru Sho Shodhana Sha Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Sevaya Bipra Punya Tirtana Sheva. He explains to them that by serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. And by that, as a result of that service, one acquires an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva, Vasudeva Kataruchi. So in other words, you get a blessing. You get a blessing if you serve a Vaishnav, pure devotee who's free from all vice. You get the blessing. That blessing is your Nitya Siddha Krishna Preme Sabhu Kabinaya, that pure love for Krishna, which is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, becomes awakened by the blessing, by the mercy of that Vaishnav. He well wishes you, and Krishna reciprocates. Krishna responds to that, that pure devotee well wishing you, and the benefit of the blessing is that your consciousness becomes purified, and you become able to appreciate hearing these messages. So that's the first instance, and then perhaps the second instance is Narada Muni. Just the story of Narada Muni. Narada Muni was just a boy. He was a very young boy. His mother was a maidservant. And it was the rainy season, and she was taking care of some sages that happened to be spending the rainy season at the hermitage that she was taking care of. And Prabhupada describes that, he was just a boy. He didn't offend them. He was quiet, it said. He wasn't, attached to frivolous sports. And he was just doing menial service for them. He would clean their plates. They would give him the dirty laundry, and he would take it to his mother so she could clean it. Whatever a little boy could do. He was just a little boy. And one day, with their permission, they were pleased with him, for his nice behavior. And one day, with their permission, he took the remnants of their food. And then Narada Muni, he's describing all this to his disciple, Srila Vyasadeva, is saying, and as a result of that, I acquired a similar taste, as what they had. He became a devotee by their mercy, like that. So there's another great example of how by the mercy of a devotee, by associating with the devotee in the right way, you get the mercy. Another statement is there by Maharaj Yudhisthira. He, when he's greeting Vidura, I can't remember all the Sanskrit, but there's this one famous line, Tirtha Kurvanti Tirtani, where he explains, Maharaj Yudhisthira says to Vidura, he says, actually, personalities like you are veritable places of pilgrimage. You're like a place of pilgrimage personified. That's how Maharaj Yudhisthira was seeing Vidura and pure devotees. They're like places of pilgrimage personified. And then the sages of Namasharanya, when they're, this is all, that comes in as part of a greater conversation between the sages of Namashrani and Suta Goswami, they explained to him that actually the value of a moment's association with a pure devotee is so important that it's more important than going to the heavenly planets. It's more important than even getting liberation from material world, from material contamination. What to speak of any benediction that one could receive here on earth like that. So that was their way of understanding the importance of getting associating favorably with a pure devotee. And then of course in the fifth canto, there's that famous conversation between Judd Bharat and Maharaj Rahugana. And at one point in that conversation, I'm not going to try to describe the pastime, as not enough time to describe all these different things, but at one point in their conversation, Judd Bharat explains to him, says, actually, if you want to get the mercy, if you want to actually get the mercy of Krishna, you have to get the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotees and Mahatpada Rajobhishekam. You have to smear it all over your body. That was his instruction. You have to get the dust of the feet of the pure devotees and smear it all over your body. That was the instruction that Judd Bharat gave to Maharaj Rahugana. And actually, that's interesting because just a few cantos forward, in the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj actually gives that same instruction to his father, Hiranyakasipu. Says the same thing, basically. That nice, and it's different, slightly different words. He says, Naisam Matis Tavad Uru Kraman Gurim. Same thing. It's translated basically the same way. He's telling Hiranyakasipu that if you want to become attached to Krishna, Vishnu, you have to, the only people who can be successful at doing that are people who take the dust of the lotus feet of the devotee and smear it all over their body. So that's there. And then in the ninth canto, which we're in this later on in this particular pastime that we're studying, Krishna himself, or Lord Narayan, will explain to Devasa Muni that the devotees are his very heart. He makes that statement. That's coming directly from Narayan himself. And then the tenth canto, there's the famous verse where the one about the person who goes to the place of pilgrimage and only to take a bath and doesn't associate with the holy people. Run through the rest of it. The Shatma Buddha Trinape Sudatu K Swadik Shala Kadrizu's Bomi Jadi Yes Tirta Kari something Saleh Nakari Chich. Yeah. Say Eva Gokara, I know that part. But anyway, so if you go to these places of pilgrimage, Krishna's telling he's instructing the gopis at the battlefield Kurukshetra, when they went there for the eclipse, that you go into these holy places and you don't try to make association with the pure devotees who reside in there, you're no better than an ass or a cow. It's foolishness. And then, of course, in the 11th canto, Krishna instructs Uddhava, famous verse, Acharyamam Vijaniyam Nava Manyeta Karachit. Don't be envious of the Acharya. He's actually, you should consider him non-different from me. So there's so many different statements there. And I sort of skip one thing real quick, but in that conversation between Maharaj Rahugana and Judd Bharat, after Judd Bharat gave him that instruction, later on, when Maharaj Rahugana gets a chance to speak, he explains to Judd Bharat, he says, actually, I'm not afraid. I'm not really afraid of a lot of things. I'm not afraid of Indra's thunderbolt. I'm not afraid of Lord Shiva's trident and a bunch of other stuff. He says, but one thing I am afraid of, really afraid of, and that's committing an offense at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. He said, that's one thing I'm really afraid of. So, it was interesting that he made that remark. And then also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's two very powerful statements there about the importance of associating with devotees properly and not improperly. They're both from Lord Chaitanya himself. One is to Rupa Goswami and one is to Sanatan Goswami. To Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya gave that famous instruction about Hati Mata. We're all familiar with that phrase, the mad elephant defense. And he was explaining to him that this is in a section where he's talking about the devotional creeper and how you have to you know, plant the seed and water it by hearing and chanting and be careful to take out the weeds and this and that. And then after, you know, after a few different instructions, he points out to him and says, but the one thing you want to be really careful not to do is don't commit an offense to a devotee, because that's like a mad elephant getting into the garden. He could just rip it all up. He'll rip it up to pieces in no time. And what you've been working to develop for, you know, quite some time, weeks, months, perhaps, in a matter of minutes, will just be totally destroyed by the, you know, the elephant just going in there and just, you know, wreaking havoc throughout your garden. So he gave that instruction to Rupa Goswami, and then subsequent to that, he was instructing Sanatana Goswami, and he gave the famous instruction about the importance of associating with the devotees. He said, sadhu sangha, sarva shastri koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. That actually, even if you are fortunate enough to associate with a pure devotee for a lava matra, which is, I think, an 11th of a second, that's it. That's sufficient. That's sufficient in and of itself to, you know, give all perfection. See, so many strong statements are there. And then in the Padma Purana, there's an interesting exchange between Lord Shiva and his wife, Parvati. Actually, she, on one occasion, she was inquiring from him, what's the highest form of worship anyway? And he said, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samachanam. So he explained to her, he said, my dear wife, of all kinds of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is the highest, but even higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of the devotee, you see? So it's the highest thing. And what else? Yeah, so anyway, getting back to this pastime. So, you know, we could understand from, if we, you know, think about all these different statements and just all the different instructions we've heard throughout Prabhupada's books. This is like, as I started off by saying, kind of the number one, you know, thing you don't want to do. You really don't want to do this. It's just like it's especially for a devotee. I mean, this is like the number one no-no, stupid thing you could do. Try, you know, be offensive or disrespectful to a devotee. Because by being disrespectful to a devotee, I mean, there's all sorts of, even what to speak of on the spiritual platform, even on the material platform, there can be all sorts of very negative consequences. But certainly, you'll dry up. You know, you'll lose the mercy. You're going to lose that opportunity to, you know, to advance in devotional service. And you know, there's actually examples in the scriptures of devotees who got leprosy, and you know, even on the physical platform, there's problems. I think there's one statement in the Bhagavatam, I couldn't find it when I was trying to study this morning, about how if one offends a great soul, his duration of life, his opulence, his duration of life, all the, you know, the positive things that people want in material life, they all, you know, are diminished. You know, that you lose your duration of life, you lose your health, you lose your money, you lose everything. You just lose. It's just lose, lose, lose. So it's just really not a good program. And on the other hand, we get information. I mean, there's one really nice pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it has a purport accompanying with it, where we get information about the other, you know, the other end of the spectrum of how important it is to, you know, serve the devotees nicely. There's this pastime where... it's a pastime, and there's another instruction in connection with it. Where, Lord Chaitanya, it was in Jagannath Puri, and it was just after the bathing ceremony of Lord Jagannath, and he was feeling a lot of separation from Lord Jagannath, so he decided to go to Lalanath, because he was, you know, really in kind of the mood of the gopis, and he was just feeling a lot of separation. So he did that. The devotees then were feeling a lot of separation from Lord Chaitanya. So they were thinking, how do we get him back? It's just going to be 2 weeks. He's just going to be there all by himself. We want him back. So fortunately, it just so happened that it was right at that same time that a lot of devotees were coming from Bengal. So they thought, okay, here's the way. So Gopinath Acharya went there, and he spoke with Lord Chaitanya. He told him, hey, the devotees, we want you to come back to Jagannath Puri. And Lord Chaitanya's going, no, it's okay. I'm here. I'm just... You know, but all the devotees are coming from Bengal, and they're going to, you know, they're coming to see you. So Lord Chaitanya agreed on those grounds to come back to Jagannath Puri. So then Gopinath Acharya went to give a message to he went to tell that to King Prataparuja that, okay, these devotees are coming, you know, Lakshmi is coming back to Jagannath Puri, and all these devotees are coming, about 200 devotees are coming from Bengal, and so I need accommodations for them, and I need arrangements for prasadam. And King Prataparuja, he said, oh yeah, sure, no problem. He was already a devotee at that point. He hadn't yet got the association of Lord Chaitanya at that point. He was really hankering, and he was you know, happy to do that. So, and then he made the request. He said, you know, I could see all these devotees coming. Who are they? I'd like to know who they are. He asked, that's a Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, actually, I don't really know him. I wish I did, but I don't. But Gopinath Acharya, he knows all of them, and he will he'll describe to you, you know. He'll describe each of their identities to you. So they went up on the roof of the palace. And as the saints came marching in, I won't sing it for you. Everyone knows that song. But as the saints came marching in, he was one by one describing, you know, Gopinath Acharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this is Advaita Acharya, and he's even honored by Lord Chaitanya. So, you know, he's like the topmost devotee. And then this one came, and then that one came, and like that, you see. So that was happening. And so then, you know, then there's an interesting instruction that Prabhupada gives in his purport to one of these verses, you know, where he's talking about all these different devotees. All these different devotees are being described. And Prabhupada says here, the translation is, this is Gopinath Acharya speaking, says, here is Raghava Pandit, here is Acharya Nandana, there is Sriman Pandit, and here are Srikanta and Narayan. Now in Prabhupada's purport he says, Narottam Das Thakur, honoring the personal associates of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has sung as follows. Godong Gera Sangi Gani, Nitya Siddha Karimani, Se Yaya Vajendra Sutapash. One who is intelligent understands that all the personal associates and devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are ever liberated. This means that because they are always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, they do not belong to this material world. One who is engaged in the Lord's devotional service 24 hours daily and never forgets the Lord is called Nityasiddha. Srila Rupa Goswami confirms this statement. Iha yasya hareya dasye karmana manasa gira nikalashvapya vashtashu jivan muktasu uchate. A person acting in the service of Krishna with body, mind, and intelligence and words is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in so many so-called material activities. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 187. A devotee is always thinking of how better to serve Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how to broadcast his name, fame, and qualities throughout the world. One who is Nityasiddha has no business other than broadcasting the glories of the Lord all over the world to his ability. Such people are already associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says, Nityasiddha Karimani. Now here it comes. This part I wanted everybody to pay particular attention to. One should not think that because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally present 500 years ago, only his associates were liberated. Only his associates were liberated. Rather, Srila Narottam Das Thakur says that anyone is a Nityasiddha if he acts on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by spreading the glories of the holy name of the Lord. We should respect those devotees preaching the glories of the Lord as Nityasiddha, and should not consider them conditioned. That's really an important instruction. And he goes on to say, simply by accepting the associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Nityasiddha, one can very easily go back home, back to Godhead. And elsewhere, there's one more instruction that it further kind of gives us further insight into that particular point. This is actually from an earlier section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know who's speaking here. I forgot to, you know, go far enough back and see, but it says, I guess it's Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. He says, all these devotees, referring to the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, all these devotees had an unlimited strength to deliver unobstructed, unceasing love of Krishna. By their own strength, they could offer anyone Krishna and love of Krishna. Okay? This is why. I mean, you just heard. This is why we want to be so careful, so respectful in how we associate with devotees. You see? It's way more than just some sentimental thing. You know, like have good manners, be nice to everybody. You know? It's way more than that. I mean, this is like, It's like so important because they have the power. You know, they have the power to actually, and we just heard how even the devotees who are fully preaching today, you know, they could be considered, according to Narottam Das Thakur, as eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya. And here we're hearing that they have the power to deliver unobstructed, unceasing love of Krishna. By their own strength, they could offer anyone Krishna and love for Krishna. This is Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami speaking. Okay, I'll read you Prabhupada's purport. Short. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung, Krishna se tomara, Krishna diti para, tomara sakati ache. In this song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that a pure Vaishnav, as the proprietor of Krishna and love of Krishna, can deliver both to anyone and everyone he likes. Therefore, to get Krishna and love of Krishna, one must seek the mercy of pure devotees. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says, Yasya Prashada, Bhagavat Prashada, Yasya Prashada, Nagati Katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is blessed by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. End quote. Prabhupada again. By the grace of a Vaishnav, or bona fide spiritual master, one can get both love of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna himself. So, in conclusion, we should do everything we possibly can to not follow in the footsteps of Devasa Muni, seeing that to be clearly the number one, as I started off by saying, I said it before I said it again, the number one most stupid, unintelligent thing you could possibly do in life is, you know, try to find fault with devotees in general, and especially devotees who are, you know, preaching, dedicating their lives to preaching Krishna consciousness. And that's, you know, don't do that. And the number, and we should try to follow in the footsteps of, like, well, let's say Narada Muni, to give an example, who is very humble and submissive to the, you know, to the great devotees. And look at the blessing he got. So there's so much more that could be said about this, but I kind of reached my time limit, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Ramaswar Prabhu. Krishna Hare 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 Hare
Hare Krishna. Thank you for that wonderful instruction. And I saw something yesterday that almost exactly corresponds to what you were saying. I went to visit my dear god sister, Payasvini Dasa, yesterday to say goodbye. And what I observed was that there is a outside person that they hired from a hospice agency who takes care of her. And because she's served, this woman is serving a devotee. She had no idea it was a devotee. And devotees come to see her, so she's now getting association with other devotees, plus serving a devotee. This outside person is chanting Hare Krishna and is eating Krishna prasadam and is completely becoming a devotee right in front of our eyes. By serving the Vaishnava, she has become a devotee herself. So it's exactly what you were saying. Mm. Very wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very powerful. Archidabhu.
Thank you, Bhagavati Prabhu, for a very nice class. The fact that you have to hammer home this instruction begs a question as to why. In other words, why aren't we naturally in this mood? And so we can see that we come from a culture of disrespect, where you're practically taught from birth to disrespect everybody. You know? And so it becomes very, very difficult for us to make the leap to respecting everyone. So I just wanted to add that in addition to hammering home the importance of not offending devotees, we should extend it to everyone. That's really where the Vedic culture, and that's why it was possible in that age. And that's why it's so surprising that Durvasa Muni is transgressing all of this, because in the Vedic age, you were taught to respect everyone from birth. You were taught to respect everyone and give extra respect to those who are highly elevated. Mm-hmm. But in our culture, we're taught to disrespect everybody, the government, the mayor, the police, everybody, disrespect everybody. Let them prove themselves, and then maybe give them a little respect. But the Vedic culture is just the opposite. Automatically give everybody respect, and then you're trained to give extra respect to those who are highly elevated. So maybe you can add from your personal experience how to make that leap from the culture of disrespect to respecting everyone and then going even further and really respecting the devotee.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind, I mean, it's a big question, is if you go out and preach, it helps a lot, you know, because you're not going to, you know, like I say, you can get a lot of flies with, you're not going to get a lot of flies with vinegar, but you'll get them with sugar. In other words, if you go out there and disrespect everybody, you're not going to distribute a lot of books. You have to, it's just as a matter of practicality, you have to, it teaches you how to deal with people. You have to learn how to be a bit humble and respectful to people if you want to their cooperation. And, you know, you need their cooperation. You need them to stop and talk to you and take your book and give you a donation. So it's, you know, it's kind of training for how to be polite and respectful to people. And, you know, then you could bring that back home, you know, and whatever you've learned about how to deal with people in your, you know, in the course of your sankirtan activities, apply it to devotees. You know, why just be polite and respectful and humble and to people out there, and then when you get back here, be all rude and, you know, aggressive and arrogant, and that doesn't make any sense. What you've learned out there, bring it back here, and you know, get the benefit of associating with the, you know, from doing it nicely with the devotees too. Is that okay? Okay. Bhajanari Maharaj, I'm sorry, I didn't even see you.
No, they gave me the mic. So.
Okay. Were you here the whole time? Were you here the whole class? Did you just sneak in or what?
No, I've been here.
Oh, okay. I didn't even notice it.
I have a witness.
Okay. All right, I hope so.
Yeah, thank you for a very nice class. I have a question, but just like Archie DeBoer was saying, a culture of respect, even the remnants, you know, like Prabhupada said, live elephant, dead elephant, you know, India's practically the culture is half dead, but still there's something. And you'll see how they'll build a wall, you know, around a tree, or they, you know, they'll build roads around. So even, but to speak of human beings, that, you know, any living entity, there's a tradition of some kind of respect for the thing. So it's nice. Just to turn the conversation, you know, it seems kind of unfair that I just commit one offense and, you know, everything's out the window and it's the, you know, the whole garden that I've cultured, my service, it's all just ripped up and destroyed. It's almost like, I'm just playing devil's advocate, my natural position. You know, it's almost like the Christians, you know, you have one life and then you're burned forever in hell. I mean, what's the justice of this?
Well, once again, first thought that comes to my mind is that when you get to the human form of life, you know, you're supposed to have a little bit of intelligence. I mean, like, say if a kid's in, you know, grade school and he's just learning arithmetic, you can, and you're the teacher, and he, you know, he's saying 2 and 2 is 5, he's making all sorts of mistakes in his addition and subtraction, and, you know, it's okay, that's understandable. He's just learning. He's just a beginner. He's just learning. But when you, by the time you come to the human form of life, you know, this body comes, it comes with a lot of, you know, subtle equipment. You're supposed to know certain things. And, it's, you know, if you don't, that's why it's a serious mistake. You know, if like a PhD in, you know, number theory or something like that made some basic mistake in arithmetic, then, you know, his PhD advisors would go, well, how could you make this kind of mistake? You know, and he's defending his thesis or something like that. And so for that person, it's a big mistake. For a kid in grade school, it's, well, it's okay. That's okay. You didn't know. So same thing. When you come to the human form of life, you're already supposed to, you know, you're supposed to know certain things, and that's one of them. So if you make that, it's a serious mistake, and therefore it's, you know, highly punishable. That's the best I can come up with. But such an oipru and then on this one.
Thank you, Prabhu. In correcting the behavior of devotees, aspiring to be devotees, and our understanding is like guru, the leader, GVC, a father, has like full authority under his subordinates. Now, for the rest of us in between, living in a community, for example, you see a lot of misbehavior, like even myself, I can be doing, I can count myself. Somebody's watching and seeing. And for the upgrowth of the community, sometimes someone might just throw garbage there, doesn't pick it up. And then somebody passed, even a devotee with a dog, doesn't even pick it up, and immediately you will commit offenses even if you don't want to. And you react, you like go straight to that person and tell them, hey, pick it up. Oh, please, Prabhu, pick it up, of course. And I'll do this. And you can go on and on. Teenagers, sometimes they might say some foul, you know, foul words. Mm-hmm. And you think, well, what is this, you know? Should I do this? Should I go and go to the authorities? They're too busy doing so many things. And what to speak of the different policies against ISKCON, that somebody might be chanting Hare Krishna, coming here, and worshipping the deities, and, you know, it's bewildering.
Okay, but what's the question?
And then the question is, and still, you know, you see this person, is the particular person is canvassing, bringing him into some other place. And, you know, so what do you do at this time? Are you committing offenses to go straight, trade for and talk to them? And, you know, like, don't do this because of this and that. Would that be like the question, would that be like offensive to go out of your way when you're not like a leader or authority or father to a particular person, but you have concern for the community to be uplift?
I think the general principle is this. You can't turn a blind eye continuously. I mean, there are things that have to be, issues that have to be addressed. But whatever you're going to do, just try to do it with utmost respect for that person. You know, just be very respectful. You know, you can present any kind of instruction if you're really making your topmost effort to be very respectful about how you do it. You could pretty much communicate almost anything to anybody. You know, yeah, and that's the essence of it. Be respectful. Just pray to Krishna, summon up all your intelligence, pray to Krishna to give you intelligence, and then just go say what you have to say, what you think needs to be said, but just try to do it with, you know, the utmost respect for that person, and that will be the most effective way that you could do that. I'll let Ramaswar have the mic, the last thing, and then we'll wrap it up. Thank you.
This reminded me of a life lesson that I learned from Srila Prabhupada. Many of us have heard and learned this lesson, that as sadhana is a practice which will lead to becoming naturally very advanced. So one of the practices that Prabhupada taught me, and all of us really, is to not be a fault finder. And it's hard sometimes to not be a fault finder. So Prabhupada gave a wonderful example of the bumblebees and the flies. And he said, you choose what kind of person you want to be. The bumblebee is hovering over the flower, collecting the honey, seeing the good, collecting the sweet from a person, from a living being. The fly is hovering over a person because he's attracted to the person's stool. So we can be attracted to what we might think is the negative, the disgusting, the horrible. If we like to talk about faults, that's what we are, we're flies. And if we like to talk about the good qualities or try to see the good qualities in a person, we're like the bumblebees. And this is a life lesson that I learned from Prabhupada that I hope one day to actually be good at.
Thank you. That's a great note to end it on. Thank you very much. Kantara Shuma Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Huh? Please tell me what I saw, millions and thousands of things.